All right, Craig, the iconic Craig Lieberman, thank you for being here. I appreciate you.
I think you mean the notorious.
The notorious indeed. Well, I want to start back at the very beginning. Like I said, I've been, very interested in your work for many years, both directly and indirectly. Let's start at the very beginning of the tuner scene. Before I even knew anything about a tuner car, I want to know how you got into it, what your kind of formative years were like.
Okay, so my dad didn't give a shit about cars. He couldn't care less about cars. He wouldn't know a spark plug from a butt plug. He just wasn't in the cars. But I grew up in Newhall, California, which is about 20 minutes north of Hollywood, and that where I lived, there were a lot of car movies or TV shows being shot. Dukes of Hazzard, right down the road from me, about 3 miles. Knight Rider, Chips, The Fall Guy. What are they? I'm missing a couple of other shows. And there's just a lot of stuff being filmed out that there. So, and it kind of piqued my interest in cars and being in kind of a small ex-Western kind of town, like there's an old town about down in the canyon, and that started it at all. And my high school was named after an actor who starred in Westerns, okay? So it was a small town, 50,000 people, me and my bicycle, my skateboard, and I traveled. So I got to be interested in cars. But in my high school, everybody had pickup trucks, right? Big brass belt buckles and all that kind of stuff. They were in a horse. I didn't care anything about that because it was mostly the girls were not cute. Sorry to say that. But a lot of guys were into like Trans Ams and muscle cars and all that. And having grown up in those cars, American cars, I knew that they were not very good cars. They didn't handle well. They can go fast in a straight line for about 50 feet before they turn into the curb and kill people, that kind of thing. But no, muscle cars were a big thing, but I just wanted to be different. So I went out and get an idea of what kind of cars I want. And I told my dad I want a BMW. Like they had that 320s were coming on scene at that time. And instead, he gave me his leased 1981 Isuzu I-Mark sedan, which is basically Opel car. It's called the Opel Gemini in other countries. It had a 1.8 motor with an automatic transmission, and it made 78 horsepower under the wheels. So I painted it Indian Porsche red, created my own front splitter, my side skirts. I got a custom-made Porsche 930, a turbo wing lookalike, put that thing on, and that was the OG racer car right there. So I would just get into the tuner cars, and then after that, I was mostly into Japanese cars, Datsun Zs. I had four. I had a 74, 260, 74 and a half, 260, a 70, 240, a 73, 240, and a 72 240Z. All of them were modified, and everybody looked at me like I was crazy because I didn't have a Camaro, a Firebird, a Chevelle, or something like that. And I just wanted to be different. And then when I graduated, I moved down to the valley, and I was staying down there because closer to my school. And down there, it was kind of cool because they had all kinds of cars. At the time, I was working at a place called Super Shops, which was a chain for muscle cars. If you've anywhere near Van Nuys, that was my store, okay? So I found this guy who had a 76, a V6 Capri. The Capri was built in Germany, right? And wired in England, the best and worst of everything. You can make it fast. So I made that car really cool. And it was like you're kind of a Euro kind of JDM, but not really. It's because nothing on it was on it that was Japanese, but that was fun because it was a lightweight car and it made 125 horsepower, which was a lot of that back then because the Smokey and Bandit Trans Am only made 140 or 150 horsepower, and it was slow, relatively speaking. So I was kind of on the outside. And then after that, I went through many, many cars, including a 67 Chevelle, which was a pile of crap. And I kept moving on. And then in 93, I bought a GT Mustang, built a Pit, I played with it for a while, and then I put a bigger motor in it, supercharged. And my son was riding back in his baby seat, and he loved it. So, but one day after he was about, what year was that? 1998. He's 5 years old, and I'm on the freeway, and this guy pulls up next to me in a Supra and then jumps on the gas, and he gapped me. He took me to Gapplebee's, as the kids say. And I said, you know, and I've always liked that car because in 1985, I was still in school. I across the street, they opened a Toyota store, and I was working at the Hyundai store right down the road on the same road. And I see this 85 turbo Super comes in, and this car was glorious. And I would love the car, but I just couldn't swing it because my dad wasn't really paying for tuition, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I had to do everything. Japanese cars. And like into cars like the Dodge Conquest. Remember those cars?
I don't.
Mitsubishi Stereo and TSIR, wide body. If you ever were seen Cannonball.
Okay.
You could Google it after. Anyway, so that car was wide body. It had all these gauges and graphic equalizers and shit. Because I grew up watching television on channel 2, 4, 7, 9, 11, 13, and 52. And if you go between 52 and 3, you can see the nudie channel, right? With the rolling, you remember that?
When everything is blurred out. Yeah, it's like everything is really blurred out past 11 p.m. Something like this.
I saw a nipple. That's big.
You gotta
shit
be lucky.
When you're 13, that's big stuff, man. Other than that, all you have is the JCPenney catalog. But cars and my cars and my girlfriend was my priority. Seriously.
Of course.
And then doing car stuff, we used to go up to the top, what we call the Nike base, the up Placerita Canyon, go all the way up to the top of the hill, overlooking San Fernando Valley. And looking down there, you're up there with your girlfriend, and then you drive down the canyon, you know, with your shitty little car, that you don't kill yourself, because you know, there's no airbags back then. Some cars didn't even have shoulder seat belts. They just had lap belts. And see, but I always liked the little fast cars because they were fun to drive. They're nimble. It wasn't until I bought my first Mark IV Supra that I really appreciated the Japanese technology. But that car was fun to modify. It was easy to modify. It was fast. And it was a fun car. I loved the target top. It was solid. It was better build quality of any American cars I've ever owned before or after. And so there was just a great car. And then one day I'm standing at a car show and this old guy comes up talking to me. He was probably about the age I am now today, but this was back in the year 2000. And he had a Hawaiian shirt and white socks and sandals. I know I don't dress like that just for your information. Anyway, so he walked away, and I didn't think anything about it. And about a week later, he calls me up. At the time, at my office, I was working for Peterson Publishing, who publishes Hot Rod, Car Craft, and all those magazines, including Super Street. And I was the director of NYRA, National Import Racing Association. It was a professional racing association. We had 11 events all over the country, from Seattle to Arizona, Texas, Florida, Virginia, Pennsylvania, where am I missing, and a couple of other places. So he saw the ad in the magazine, and he just dialed the phone number in the ad, and it rings to my desk. So he says, my name is David Barter. I'm working on this movie called Redline, and I see this ad for racing, and we're looking for these kinds of cars. Do you think you could take some time and have a conversation with me? I said, sure. So he comes to my office, 8th floor on Wilshire Boulevard, and he sees this plaque that I have up on the wall with a picture of my yellow Supra that he saw a week ago at the car show. And he says, yeah, these cars. I'm talking about the cars and all that. He goes, yeah, I saw a car just like that. I looked at him and That's my car. Don't you remember talking to me? It was a week ago. What, all white people look alike? So we had a laugh. So he goes, so we hit it off right away. So he grabbed me and he says, okay, let's go to lunch. And he pulls out a little bag and he puts a script on top of the table and $100 bill. And he says, here, this is for you. So what are you talking about? So I want you to read it. And then I know you're going out of town for the rest of the week, but when you get back, we can have a meeting. We're talking about, I need your input on it. So I get on the airplane to go. I was going to Maryland that weekend. And I'm reading this thing. My wife's sitting next to me and I'm laughing. And I'm like, well, they have mentioned some of the cool Japanese cars, but they have the pecking order kind of reversed. They're going from a good car to a crap car. And some of the dialogue was way off because obviously nobody did as deep in the tuner scene or even the car scene. They knew about American muscle cars, but they didn't know anything about tuner cars. So they didn't know the terminology or how it works. And so I told him a few things and he says, okay, how about this? At the end of the lunch, he says, I'll tell you what, I want you to come see us at Universal. I'll get you a gate pass. I'll set it up for Tuesday or Friday. I said, it was Tuesday. And he said, Friday. And can you bring your little jalopy with you? And I said, sure, the yellow super. So I show up to the gate. This is a fun story. I pull up to the gate and a very serious looking guard. The guy looks like a cross between the guy from Samuel L. Jackson from Pulp Fiction and Forrest Whitaker. But he looked like a guy was no bullshit, you know, kind of guy that like you don't do anything that he doesn't tell you to do. And I said, hi, I'm here, Craig Lieberman, to see David Martyr. And he turns his back, doesn't even acknowledge me, picks up the phone. He's here. And you pull over right there and don't move. And then now I think I'm in trouble. So I pull right over. If you could look at the side of the gate, there's a picture of it on Google. And then another guy comes with those golf carts with a little siren on the top, right? It's a little blue siren, makes a U-turn and says, follow me. We pull up next to the commissary, pull the car up to the side. He brings these chrome stanchions with velvet rope. And he said, just stay here. Somebody will be with you in a few minutes. And then I'm waiting. It's hot day at the Targa top off, and I'm already hot. And about 30 people come walking out. And I thought they were just walking into the restaurant. This was the production team. It was the script writers, the producer, the director, Valdemar Kalinowski. I can never say his name. He was the costume guy. The art director is there. Paul Walker, Vin Diesel, who I didn't know Paul Walker. I never seen him. I've seen him, but I don't remember if I saw that movie Boiler Room before or after. I don't remember, honestly. But he looked familiar to me anyway. So they were walking around the cars, and we had two giant nitrous bottles on the back. And everybody was asking, why do you have oxygen bottles in your trunk? It's not oxygen. It's nitrous oxide. What do you need that for? And I said, well, you don't really need it, but it does help. And so everybody's asking questions. And then Rob says, why don't you take me for a ride? And I said, okay. So we get in the car, and you live in the Valley, do you?
Echo Park, actually. So funny enough.
Mm-hmm. So now I'm going on the 101 North, you know, where Lankershim is as you come down the hill. Okay. So I'm on second gear and the Targa top is off. Right. And I start rolling into the gas. And when we get up to the top, about 4,000 RPMs, I floor it. By the time I'm on the freeway, I'm doing 135 miles an hour. And Rob is like, is that the nitrous? Is that the nice nitrous? I said, no, that's the turbo. And he goes, I love it. I love it. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. So we get back. We stop. You know, he doesn't have that hair. He was already bald by that time. But he gets out of it. And then the tram comes around the corner with all these people. And they see all these people, you know, talking about this car right here. And he goes, oh, hey, that's Rob Cohen. He did the movie. What was it called? The one where he was running away. That wasn't even him. It was a famous movie. I forget what it was. The one with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they go where he goes down the sled down. What was that thing?
You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I forget the name of the movie. It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to look it up. Anyway, it's off the on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, so he goes, and then the guy says, "Well, so Rob, what are you doing?" He says, "I'm putting this car in my next movie." And I'm sitting up there, "You are?" I don't remember that discussion. So he takes me upstairs into his office. It was like a 3 or 4 story building right next to the gate. And I got to tell you this, that office looked like everything I thought a director's office would look like. Stacks of scripts and all that kind of stuff. Pictures of him with Arnold Schwarzenegger. The Running Man. That's what the name of him.
I see. Okay. I remember that film.
So my boss, David Martyr, as it turned out, he was going to be my boss. Yeah, I would tell him this stuff. I said, "Well, here's what you got going on. It's clear that you guys did a lot of research and everything. There's some terms in here that don't really work, but we can fix those. I think we should take a look at the car selection because you got quite a few things going wrong because you go in the wrong order. You're going from low-end cars to high-end cars is not the way to do it. Mm-hmm. You need to start off I misspoke. You're not supposed to go from high-end cars to low-end cars. You got to go the other way around. So I went up on the grease board, and I just erased some stuff. And I said, here's the cars. You got the GTRs, Acura NSXs. You got Mitsubishi 3000 GT, Mark IV Supra, Mark III Supra, FD RX7, and then the Z32 300ZX, and then other cars that follow behind that. There was a lot of cars that were not available yet. The 350Z was not exist. The WRX was not in the United States. The E36 was the highest BMW rate. The E46 was naturally aspirated. We were waiting for something else like the M3, even though it's naturally aspirated. But that car was not out yet. So there was a lot of cars we couldn't use. We didn't want any Mustangs. We didn't want any Camaros. We didn't want any American stuff right in for the Charger because that dominates dad. Okay, so that's the way it worked. And that worked, and it was a great thing. So my job was to not just talk to him about the cars, but to help them find the cars. So how do you do that in 2000? There's no Facebook, there's no Instagram, there's no YouTube, there's no OnlyFans, there's MySpace, right? So MySpace was basically a music thing, right? If you went to MySpace, everybody was like trying to get in the music business. So you couldn't do it that way. So we had to do something very old fashioned. We used our Motorola Razr phones. You remember those things?
Wow. Of course. Yeah. I mean, definitely my favorite phone. And I do recall MySpace very well, you know, child of the Y2K era, but it's been so long. Your memory is actually better than mine on these, I think.
Well, I've told the story 1,000, maybe 10,000 times, really. Anyway, so
yeah.
Fortunately, I had a great protege, R.J. DeVera, who was an undercredited technical advisor as well. He's a very big part of this stuff. He has a lot of connections. I was in his cars club called All Their Art and Motion, so we're calling our all the buddies. Okay, this week they want to see Integras, they want to see Civics, they want to see Audi 84s, they want to see Volkswagen Golfs, and so word got around. And I remember going on the forums like HondaTech.com, all those Beamer forums, telling people we're going to be making a movie, and they're going like, "Oh yeah, sure, okay." It's straight to DVD or straight to VHS. I'm serious. It's going on, man. Okay. You don't want to come? Pshaw.
That's
it. But for the most part, people showed up. So we had to take some cars that we really didn't want initially. But it's like going into a bar at night. Okay. When you get there at 8 o'clock, you're going to be very particular about who you sit down and start a conversation with. But when last call comes around, you go with whatever's that's sitting at the bar.
Fair enough.
I hope these metaphors are working for your younger audiences.
They do. They're working nicely for me. It's funny because I still, even though I don't drink, I still understand the metaphor very well. So basically the lights come on, it's 3 a.m., and you're left with what you're left with. So how did that work out in terms of the cars that you ended up finding?
For the most part, we got some really good cars. To Rob's credit, he stayed on task. He wanted the cars that looked aggressive, right? He wanted the big shopping cart wings, you know, look like a shopping cart. And they wanted big mouth bumpers, So some of the cars already had body kits, including mine. They said, no, we need to get bigger and more aggressive, more gills, strakes, vents, cooling ducts, whatever you call it, but big, wide mouth. It's cars got to look very, very aggressive. And so for most of the part, he nailed it. But that my one car that I didn't think what was the best for the cast was the VW Jetta.
Interesting.
Three, but we couldn't afford it because for every car that you have to have multiple copies for stunt cars or backup cars, right? You have the shiny car called the Hero One car or Principal One. You want a back replica, very close. Okay. Right? And then you have to have multiple stunt cars and backups of those. So we had, I think, about 8 Supras in total.
Wow. Okay.
And you got to remember, we were on a budget. When we started out, it was $25 million. And then fortunately, David Martyr's wife, her name is Cool Martyr. And at the time, she was the vice president of production at Universal. And Cool told David that, they're not going to give you any more money because they don't know anything about this movie. They haven't seen anything. You need to cut yourself a trailer, out of the dailies to get this thing pumped up. And then they did that. They got the editors to put something together. It came out fantastic by all accounts. And they got a raise because $25 million back then would fund a movie like When Harry Met Sally. It's a walk and talk movie, right? You got a few main characters and you're filming on maybe 3 or 4 sets. $25 million to do it. But to make a movie car, we needed $40 million. They gave us $39. Can't complain, but you saw. And being there on set on many days, watching this stuff, not in your age group, but I remember looking at my home movies, because they were filmed on this shit. Where's the camera? This is film in here.
What is that? I've never seen that before. That's film.
This says November 68. November 68.
So what kind of camera is that? That's wild.
An extinct camera. They don't make it. 8mm. When I open this up, it's a thin. See how thick this is? This is a roll of film. You've seen negative film mills, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, imagine it being this thick. It's not even, the thickness of my pinky. And it goes through a reel. You all see movie projectors from theaters.
Of course.
Okay, that's what this is.
And so you still have all of that footage?
No. This, we didn't film on this. This,
I see.
I'm just talking about when I was a kid and they recorded me on this film. It looks,
you look
stupid, don't you? And the same thing when you're standing there on set, the cars are only going by about 35 miles an hour. And they grab the e-brake, and it's not interesting. It's not dangerous. It's not even adventurous. I did more shit in that my high school parking lot every day, what they were doing on set for the most part. But it was fascinating for me to watch because I thought this thing was kind of goofy, but I was going to reserve my opinion until I see start of the cuts. So I got to see some of the editing processes because they ran some things across to me that I had to look at or go down there and talk to these people and say, blah, 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 blah. And, well, this is wrong. Too bad. It's already filmed. We can't do anything about it. And Rob would always say, don't worry. No car people are going to watch this movie. It's just going to be like 16-year-old kids from Kansas, Central America, and that kind of stuff. That was not really an accurate prediction.
I
was one of the guys who rented the cars out. They took my Supra and my Maxima, and then all my friends who were rented their cars, we all got invited to the first cut. So they opened a theater on site at Universal Lots, and it's called the Alfred Hitchcock Theater. And the producers and directors were there. They were sitting behind us and watching us, our inspections. And there's a bunch of stuff that they kind of mishmashed technical terms like what's going on? I said, where did you get that? You have a sheet of paper. I have three sheets of papers of technical terms. You can't mix and match them and put them together. It's not like living room furniture. Okay, this, you can't just take this one and put the other one. And it's not a recipe for quiche, okay?
Of course.
Everything, okay. Buddy didn't, but that was too late for that. There were a lot of those kind of things. There were other things like the floor pan falling out of the Mitsubishi Eclipse.
Speak to me on that, because that was an iconic scene with the danger to manifold and the floor pan falls out. Let's talk to that.
It's funny. My editor is building that video right now, and he's editing it the way I wanted it to do. So he's doing a whole sequence anime. Anyway, so here's how it goes. So it's going to be a drag race, and what the basic plot was, Paul Walker, Brian O'Connor is racing, but there's going to have to be some kind of giant scuffle inside the car. But what could that be? And they came up with these diamond plate floor mats that they interpreted it to be the actual floor pan of the car, right? And it falls out. I'm reading in this in the script, and I said, this isn't how it works. That's the first off. That's not right, because I had seen a rough evidence. That's completely wrong. Completely wrong. They don't. That's a whole other thing. And he said, what should we do? And I said, well, you have nitrous bottles, okay? Nitrous bottles have to be at a certain pressure to work. Those bottle pressure gauges have a white section, then it goes into green, stays in green, then it goes into yellow, and then it goes into red. Inside the bottle, there's 950 PSI. The gas inside of it is minus 125 Celsius. So here's what I said. Why don't you put the camera on the gauge and just see it go into the red? You don't have to know anything about anything. That you know that something going into a red end, that is bad. Even my grandmother would know that. That's bad, that's bad, bad. And I said, why don't you have the hose pop, split, and now it's spraying like a fire extinguisher. Ice cold air, you know, all this foggy, and it fogs up the windshield and ice ups up the windshield, and he's driving like this to trying to hold the hose and all that kind of stuff. That would be fine.
Wow.
Because you couldn't make the car blow up or the engine fail, because he has to drive it away when he's running from the cops. And
of course.
I said to Rob, well, you have him with a gaping hole under Vin Diesel's feet. What he's going to do? Fred Flintstone, you know that? Yabba dabba do.
Of course.
So they got a lot of things wrong. And then after the movie came out, I was monitoring the forums, the car forums. There were only a few people who even caught those things at that time.
I see. Okay. So it wasn't until much later that people really started critiquing it. But at the time, it was still like, this is cool as shit. You know, made import tuning cool. Maybe for the first time, or brought that into the pop culture, which actually briefly I want to touch on, because little do you know how much you influenced me directly, not just indirectly through your cars. So my first car, a 2002 Lexus IS300, absolutely red, of course, with the 2JZ GE, not the GTE. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the badass, obviously. But your car, reason I had the IS300, and then also the Y2K aesthetic, I think, that you built as a result of you tuning the car, that flowed into my own design, which ultimately flowed into fashion. Everything that I loved about Y2K started there. So I'm saying you specifically, not just the film, had a hand, I think, in a lot of the work I ended up doing in art. Just letting you know.
Way too much credit or too much blame. That's what I've been telling everybody for 20 years.
Yeah, take both for sure. Mm.
But, you know, it was when I saw it put together all again. I didn't see it all with it, all the music. So I saw it, let me tell you, one time, one, two. Oh, there was another scene too. I was working for like five different departments at one time. They called me for sound engineering. They took me to the ADR studio, and they have the movies playing on the wall. And there were about 25 people walking around the room, around a hanging microphone in the middle of the room. And they were trying to read the lips of what people were saying in the background, right? And so I had to look at each one of those clips. And somebody's reading the lips and telling me what they're saying. They said, no, that's not right. I don't know where they came up with that. And so we had people assigned to use these lines as they're walking around. So I'm seeing parts of the the scenes that I hadn't seen, like the part where Dominic pulls up with the red RX-7. That was and then Race War stuff. And so there was that. But my favorite story is the Race Wars one.
Please, let's talk.
All right. So again, in September of that year, September of 2000, we were getting close. The movie's supposed to release the next summer. But we're getting down to the nitty gritty. We needed to get about 1,000 people or more to San Bernardino Airport to go do Race Wars. Okay. So we call everybody up again. It's like 4 or 5 days of brutal heat on the tarmac out in the desert. And we thought nobody was going to show up. We got plenty of people, but not enough extra people. We had plenty of cars, not enough extra people. So there was a situation where we're trying to build up the suspense here going with the race with Johnny Tran and what's his name, Jesse, right?
Right.
So we're getting this thing set up. And Rob says, I'm going to put you in the movie. Rob, I'm going to be honest. I have a great face for radio. Thank you. But all right, you don't have to say anything. So he says, okay, because I'm starting the races, right, because I have to keep my direction was keep these cars running every 10 seconds because we're filming way over here. But the background is you and the drag race. It's the background. So they got to keep it moving. The problem was they hired too many Asian girls wearing no clothes, basically, along the sideline. And the drivers were paying attention to them. Okay. So he was getting frustrated. And when he finally finished over there, he came over here and he turned the camera around this way and they had a camera on a crane over here. And he goes, okay, we're going to film this race. It's the launch between the RX-7 and Letty. And then it goes, okay, action. I go, boom. And he goes, cut.
I remember it.
You can see me in the right at the end of it. Watch, play it back slow motion. You see my mouth goes.
I rewatch it. I remember you in the hat. I remember you dropping the hands.
Yeah, I dropped the F bomb under my breath, but because number one, the car was really loud, and all I heard in the headphones was cut. What did I do? What happened? I didn't see anything. And Rob comes over to me, and goes, "You can't do that. Can't do what?" Because you can't just go like that. That's how you start a race. Unless it's at night, then you do a light. What do you want me to do? Take my panties off? I mean, what are we doing here? He goes, you got to build up some suspense. And I said, well, what does that look like, actually? And he goes, did you remember Top Gun, the opening scene? He wanted me to go fall to my knee like he's launching the plane.
I mean, whatever's authentic for you. No. You know,
and so I do it. He goes, that's it. Rob, I can't do that. Why? My friends are going to watch this movie. My friends, and he goes, your friends are not going to watch this movie. It's for everybody else. It's not for you. Okay. So I'm backing up to the starting point where they have the little piece of blue tape. This is where I'm supposed to start.
Sure.
Back up there. And he goes, all right, just give me a few minutes. I got to do something else. And just keep them running, because we're just going to film some stuff taking over here. You're doing anything. So I couldn't get the guys to go. And he's screaming in the phone, where are the cars? Keep them moving. And so I'm getting pissed because I know most of the drivers are going to, dude, they're all looking over there, right? And I'm going, dude, look at me. You see me? You got me? And they're going, yeah. And then I go, boom. And Rob said, that's it. You got it. Do that again. And then for years.
It just sounds like so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah. For the next 10 years, anytime I went convoy with my buddies for some car show or anything, they pull up on me and they freeway and they go like this.
Classic, man. You inspired a generation. For better or for worse, you inspired a generation of street racers, which, you know, say what you will, but it did a lot for the culture.
Yeah. After the movie, though, that they didn't have anybody to talk to the press about street racing and all that kind of stuff. So I got invited back to Universal, the back lot, where they're doing the press junket. You know, mm-hmm. They're interviewing everybody on each street. Paul Walker's on one street next to my car and so forth and so forth and so forth. And then on the last street, there's me and all the press from all over the world. All, and I mean all over the world. Sometimes people didn't even speak English. So the way I'd have a translator, do you think that the number one question they have was, do you think Universal is glorifying or responsible for illegal street racing? And I shut them down real fast. I said, did you ever see American Graffiti? That was in the 1975 or 1976.
Interesting.
Did you ever see two-lane blacktop? I can name a dozen different movies. Cannonball Run.
Mm-hmm.
People have to be responsible for their own actions. Are they glamorizing it? No. No. But when you look at it, some people are going to say, oh, that's so cool, we're going to do that. Are you worried about what's going to happen at the theaters at the opening night? I already know what's going to happen. Everybody's going to be revving their car. They do that every time they come out of a car show. They do it every time when they get on the freeway or they're going with their buddies. They do it all the time. So I did it myself when I was a kid, that way before Fast and Furious was even a nugget in somebody's brain. But that was it, man. But what it did do is this. All those cars that have the stickers on the side of the starter cars, all those companies participated because it was good for their business. Because I was a director of NYRA, I had the opportunity to ask these people to support the movie by giving us products or being part of the licensing product and kind of stuff. And it'd be great. And I think it would help your sales. And they had some faith in that. And after the years I ran into these people's, you know, our sales went up like 1500%. We couldn't keep nitrous bottles on the chrome button, nitrous bottles on the shelves for 2 years. Barco, Gritty, all those places. And it boomed for the tuner segment. You remember those years, from 2001 through about 2006? The tuner market was on fire, right?
Yeah.
Drifting car shows, hot import nights, all that kind of stuff. And it was just huge. And so it was an infusion to that tuner segment for good or bad.
Let's speak to that a little bit, because to your point, the golden year for me was 2006. So it was some years after the original two movies had released, but I was primed, right? And that's when I started tuning my vehicle, was before I even had my license. I was taking all my birthday money and just getting what I could. So 2006 comes around, you know, I'm out there modifying my car and I'm looking back on the work that you did. So let's speak a bit maybe to those cars that you had specifically. You had, of course, the Toyota Supra, which is absolutely iconic. And you had a Nissan Skyline that came later, the R34. Tell me about the experience of owning those cars, what that was like, because you were very prescient in terms of having those cars. It's very fascinating.
Well, the Supra I built for myself. It was yellow. It was much cleaner. It had Rod Mullen and Still and stuff. It was clean, tasteful, wasn't flashy. Because I've had sponsors like Gritty, I made sure that the decals were on the car, because it was the whole premise of doing that car is get the greatest stuff, go to some shows, and, you know, and help all those other brands who help me build the car that I want. And so they can use the car to do it at shows or SEMA or something like that, that kind of thing, in other car shows. And it worked out well. But I basically built it for myself. I would have changed some things by now anyway. But then after that, I still had the Supra. I got it back from the movie, and it was still orange. And I didn't like the graphics. And I honestly, like I said earlier, alluded to earlier, that I think that at the time, that movie was basically going straight to VHS. And I realized I was wrong when I went to the actual, not the premiere, but the next 3 days later, when it opened in theaters, I went to the local theater and I was sitting in the audience about five rows in. And after the Honda Civic, screaming. Now, I'm old enough to tell you that I was sitting in the audience in 1977 when Star Wars first came out. I was sitting in about the same place. And I remember that first scene, right? And I was like 12 or 13 years old at the time. I didn't jump out of my seat, but I wanted to. That was the greatest piece of cinema I had seen up until that point. So then I realized that this movie is going to be big, and it was right. And then they still had me working for them for the next, doing interviews for TV stations, radio stations all over the world, magazine articles, all that, because nobody knew anything about tuna cars. Nobody. Nobody in Universal had an idea of what these cars were. And then when it was all about done, they called me back again. Okay, we're going to be making two Fast Two Fears. So by that time, I already bought my Skyline GTR. It was the car I want because of Gran Turismo.
Mm.
And knowing what I know about the Japanese tuner market, that was the end all be all. I mean, that is the supreme car, the R34 GTR V-Spec. Boom. Bye. So I modified that car. I changed it to BB Blue because I wanted that car to be a magazine car too. That was probably by the time I was we got to the start of Too Fast and Furious, the cars had been in something like 16 magazines going back to 1996. The other cars I've had. So it was kind of a fun thing. It was just one thing that I wanted to do. And the main thing I was doing, I was building these cars for me, but a lot of it was to piss my dad off. Because he always said, cars are just appliances. They'll do nothing for you in life.
So. It's sensible. At the end of the day, they're liabilities. But you know what? It's like the tuner culture. I mean, it brought an aesthetic that just gave people meaning. Truth be told, I mean, when you're young, it was just a subculture that gave people such meaning, including myself. I couldn't even describe what that was like. Going back to your earlier point, for me, it was metal. It was my music. It was my tuner car and girls, right? I mean, it was the only three things I cared about as a teenager. So it's like, you know.
Exactamundo. I switched my music likes because in the early 1980s, the long-haired girls, the metal girls, were not very attractive. So I went over to the Duran Duran side kind of thing, Depeche Mode and all that kind of stuff.
Of course.
My girlfriends got better looking every year.
So with that in mind, because I'm picturing the Craig aesthetic from those years, it's really cool how music and all of these things have you know, come together with tuner culture. You think back on the 2000s fashion, cars, music, and then it comes back to the Fast and Furious, and it comes back to your contributions. I want to touch on a point before we kind of move forward with the conversation, and that is the iconography of the nitrous oxide scene. You spoke to that a bit earlier. Okay, so NOS, right? It defined, when everyone thought about the Fast and Furious, they thought about NOS, nitrous oxide. What was your contribution to that particular aspect of the film?
Well, there are two. I mean, nitrous oxide has been something I've been using since, God, when we first the system, 1993. As a matter of fact, when I ordered my Mustang JT, the nitrous system showed up before the car because I ordered it from Summit.
Wow, interesting.
I have the pictures to prove it. Pictures, hard pictures. So I was already into nitrous and all that kind of stuff. I knew a lot about it. I've used it many times, blah, 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 blah. And then I got in the supercharge. And then you put a fogger system, blah, blah, blah. But nitrous was a big thing because it's drama. You hit the button, all of a sudden you start going fast. And it is a push it back in the seat, depending on what kind of car you have. And how relationship with a guy by the name Wadi Hammam, who was like the director over at Nitrous Systems right here over by John Wayne here at Port. He was a really great guy. And when I called him up to help me with the car, he said, no problem, we'll give it to you at cost, blah, 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 put it in there. And then when I called him up, I said, we're going to need 16 bottles. What can you do for us? And he was selling them to us first for invoice or whatever. But he didn't think there was going to be much about this movie. And after I saw him about 2 years later, he goes, holy shit, I told you the story. So then Too Fast, Too Furious, that car, I put that intercooler on with the Nitrous Express system because I know those guys from the Naira series, and Wadi had moved on, and the Nitrous company itself was sold. So I didn't have my connections there. And then I figured, because I'm a director of Igniter, I can't play favorites for certain companies, especially when they're not a sponsor. So the next logical thing was to call NX. So the one contribution that I think I really like, that I'm happy that happened, I showed them the Marilyn Monroe gag when the dress gets blown up from an old movie. Yeah. You know that? I said, why don't we do the purge and blow it up a girl's skirt? When Paul Walker pulls up with the R34, and they wrote it into the script.
That's wild. Yeah, that was a really cool idea.
I thought so.
I think so too. That's interesting. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's interesting because it brings us kind of to the tuner car scene as a whole, right? So, you know, looking back on the contributions to the films, let's talk about the tuner scene. It's obviously changed a lot. I mean, here you are helping lead the charge to bring it into pop culture, right? And a mainstream consciousness. But where is it now? I feel like, you know, you've moved on in terms of your taste in cars, which I want to get to after. And I have too, for all intents and purposes. But where do you see the tuner car scene being now versus where it was?
Well, I think there's greater interest in it. I mean, how many people are interested in Skylines right now? I mean, you can't go anywhere on YouTube without scrolling about a couple pages and seeing something about a Japanese car, especially an R34 or R35s. People now, we have to remember this, it's a cycle of life. When you're 16 years old and you like these cars, but you can't afford them, by the time you're 40, you can't afford them. And then you go back and buy those cars. And I see a lot of that. It happened when I was in school. I remember in college when people were saying, man, I can't afford this car, man. I want to buy a 69, 396, whatever, or this, or a Camaro SS or Yanko or all that. None of those people do. But a lot of those people I've stayed contact with, they bought the cars that they wanted when they were younger. Okay. So now this whole generation now, these kids now, this accounts for the super prices. You're looking at Mark IVs. These things are $160,000 in good shape.
Unreal. Yeah.
You're seeing beat up right-hand drive cars for $70,000. It's insane. So these younger kids get into it, but at that time, and I paid attention because I was still in the market, by 2006, the market was saturated. The drag racing and shows were starting to die because it spent too much splitting the pie. You know, these sponsors have to sponsor car shows, drag races, drift events, magazines, and everybody started switching to online sales. And so their marketing dollars couldn't go any further. And so it started getting different. And by the kids who were 16 years old at 2001, by the time they were we got the recession, 2008, right? These kids were in their mid-20s and had kids of their own. You know, they're married or they're going through school. They have school loans and they just can't swing it. And now here we are a little later, you know, after Paul Walker dies in 2013, then the interest came back for Japanese cars, in particular the R34s or any kind of Skyline. And then, of course, we had the R35 that was released a few years earlier. 2000, was that 2008 here? In 2007 in Japan?
I remember seeing it when I went to Japan for the first time in 2008. I saw the R35 there just screaming through Tokyo. I was on a bus, and I just remember seeing that car, and I was mesmerized. It's kind of like the first time I saw maybe one of the Fast and Furious films. Crazy. But yeah, to your point.
Yeah, and at the time I had an RS4, an Audi RS4. I was into my European car craze at the time. I'd gone through a couple of Lamborghinis. I had a Porsche 996 Turbo and then the RS4, which I had for 5 years, which was the car that I've owned the longest until I bought this car, the R35. So I moved on to other more sophisticated cars. I've done work for BMW doing dealer audits for CSI, so I know their secrets and all that kind of stuff. I know there's strengths and weaknesses in engineering and so forth, and what's still great cars. The new one are too ugly to date. Or, you know, I don't care how rich you are, and you look like when your face looks like that. I'm sorry, I just can't do it.
So where are you now in terms of your cars? Because you had sold the Supra and the Skyline some years ago, from my understanding. So, and you moved on to kind of European cars, but at least you dabbled. Where are you now? What does your car collection look like?
There is no collection now, man. It's my wife's Audi S3, which she wants me to add 100 horsepower to her now. and my R35. The thing about the R35 is it's a great car. It's very capable. You can change the tires and wheels when you go to a track, fill it up with E85 and you drive it. Meanwhile, I have heated seats. DVD net, navigation, all that kind of stuff, all the comforts, It's very reliable, knock on wood.
And is it modified?
Oh, yeah.
How modified?
FPO. Full bolt-ons, you know, do the exhaust in, intake pipes. You get injectors, pumps, E85 swap, transmission upgrade, that kind of stuff. That's it.
It's a sick car. So what excites you about the... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Craig.
It makes 650 at the wheels. That's good enough.
It's a lot of power. So what, basically, kind of bringing us into the conclusion of the interview, what excites you about the future? Like, what excites you in the general sense about the future of, it could be car tuning, it could be the car industry. Everything obviously is headed towards a technological direction, but what excites you personally?
Well, I'm hoping to come up with some kind of biofuel to extend the life of these cars, you know, because otherwise these cars are going to be very expensive. I mean, if I had a moment and the time daily, I would go buy another Datsun 240Z, build the car the way I wanted it when I was a kid, with air conditioning this time. I know that about myself. I need air conditioning and audio video because every one of my cars had audio video. So much so that I blew a window up going on the freeway.
Absolutely wild. Well, it sounds incredible, Craig. I appreciate you taking the time today. And, you know, I look forward to everything you do. Obviously, like I said, could you tell everybody about where to find you and some of the stuff you have working on right now?
Yeah, so I've been traveling a lot to European car shows at the behest of Chrome Cars, is this company that are buying up a lot of the movie cars from the first two movies because those are the ones everybody wants to see at this particular time. So I've been to Germany 5-6 times last year, this past year, and Belgium, Netherlands, France, and Italy, all just this year. When I go out there, it's like 2002. It's like walking around hot import nights. That's what these car shows are like. It's the same kind of mindset. Everybody's respectful, kind. There's no brawling. There's no bullshit. It's just what it was 20 years ago because Europeans have some chill. Apparently, Americans don't have any chill. And I don't know if that's a good thing for us or for a bad thing for us. But I can tell you this. I do not go to car shows in the United States anymore. I go to cars and coffee.
Well, I hope I'll get to catch you.
I go to cars and coffee on the Saturdays down here in South OC, San Clemente. That's where I go. That place is chill. But you're not going to see me at Fuel Fest or Hot Import Nights standing around my car for 9 hours. That's better things to do. But I still enjoy it, you know. When people come up and talk to me about my car or I see a cool car, I'll go talk to them. You know? So that's it. And that's what these guys are. When I'm done at my show over in Germany, I usually latch onto some local car club and we go to dinner. And just like it was with my old car club 20 years ago. Even if I don't speak enough of the language, but I get enough to get it going. Usually they have some English. I have some German and some French. So it works out pretty well, and some Japanese. So it's like I said, I'm still doing this stuff, and I'm still doing Fast and Furious content on my YouTube channel because there are a lot of things have changed over the years. Where do these cars go? More information come to light. Other stories surface from other people's perspectives, which I try to put those in as well. And it just rejuvenated my channel because there are a lot of people who haven't seen this because when I put my first videos up, I only had like 5,000 subscribers. Now I have 213,000 subscribers.
Yes.
So I'm on Instagram, but I usually do only post when I'm at car show kind of stuff because during the day, I actually have a job. I run a digital media company, so... You know, Shopify guy and all that kind of stuff. So I'm kind of busy. My wife indulges my hobby. She came from the Porsche world, so she's a car girl as well. She knows cars. She's into her comfort mode right now. She doesn't want a car that you're going to have to be very careful to park with and all that. And the S3 is a nice, clean car. It barely has 40,000 miles. It's 2017 model. But that's fine for her. She doesn't need anything But she keeps saying we should put in another 100 horsepower in the car. So maybe we'll see.
Well, I'm glad to see y'all are still continuing the tuning tradition. I think it's amazing. But Craig, I'm so grateful for everything you've done. Thank you so much, of course, for doing this interview with me. I appreciate you so much, man. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have to talk about you. Finally,
for sure.
Yeah.
I know. Thank you, brother.
Well, let's stay in touch.
We will, absolutely.